Coming up on this next episode of the EndoWife podcast, Samantha Bowick, a patient advocate for endometriosis and the author of Living with Endometriosis, The Complete Guide to Risk Factors, Symptoms, and Treatment Options. Stay tuned to hear her story.
You're listening to the EndoWife podcast with host Dana May, endometriosis educator and advocate, author of the Endo Self-Care Guide, and founder of FemDefense CBD Self-Care Products. The EndoWife is here to chat, answer your questions, and hear from experts about living with endometriosis, chronic pain, painful periods, and healthy living. Enjoy our next episode and join in. You can submit your questions, leave a message using the Anchor app, or send an email to hello@endowifelife.com. Watch for updates on Instagram at EndoWifeLife and leave your comments. Before we get started, let's hear from one of our show sponsors.
Shout and say hi to Samantha for joining us on the call today and sharing some snippets of her life and her struggles with endometriosis. Hi, Samantha.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we're really glad to be sharing this with you today. So just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about Samantha.
Okay, yeah, my name is Samantha Bowick, and I'm from Aiken, South Carolina. I've lived here pretty much my whole entire life. And I started having endometriosis symptoms about the age of 13 when I started my period.
And did you have any family history that you know of?
At that time, I didn't know that anyone in my family had endometriosis. But a few years later, one of my older cousins, she's about 13 years older than me, she was having surgery for endometriosis and was diagnosed and then had a hysterectomy.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So share a little bit about your journey with your diagnosis, because oftentimes, you know, we hear about, of course, on average, women see anywhere from 6 to 10 doctors before they are accurately diagnosed. So right. What was your experience with getting an official diagnosis?
So I actually didn't go through that getting diagnosed, but I did later. So my first gynecologist that I went to, I was about 16 years old. She put me on birth control, and then about 3 years later, she did my first laparoscopic surgery and diagnosed me with endometriosis.
And what led you to having the laparoscopy?
Because I was having heavy periods, painful, debilitating, missing school. And as a teenager, you know, that's very frustrating and you want to do all the things that your friends are doing and you can't. And I was having heavy bleeding and the birth control was just not helping with my symptoms. And I told her about my cousin and she said that it is possible that I could have endometriosis. So she recommended the surgery.
Awesome. So she was pretty familiar or treated several patients with endometriosis?
So at the time, I was really young, so I didn't really know what questions to ask. But she seemed very familiar with it. But after the surgery, a couple weeks after the surgery, I remember having really bad pain, and I was still feeling awful like I did before the surgery. And she didn't really have any answers for me and told me there was nothing else that she could do. So after that, I found my second gynecologist, and she tried different birth controls, and that's the first time I tried Lupron. And so I've had side effects from Lupron, and I've actually been on it 2 other times since then.
Okay, yes, I've been on Lupron myself as well. I did a very shortened duration just because I started reading about kind of the long-term side effects, and it really scared me. What was your course of treatment like when you were using the Lupron?
So my second doctor, she's the one that prescribed Lupron, and I did 2 doses with her. each dose lasted for 3 months. So I would get the first dose. I went back in 3 months and got the second dose. So I was on in a total of 6 months during that time period. And I remember having hot flashes. I was going through menopause while my mom was at 20, 21 years old. It was just a really difficult experience. But then, let's see, it was probably almost 2 years after that is when I tried Lupron again, just because I was so tired of the pain. I was missing work. I was in college. I was missing classes. So I was pretty much trying to figure out what I could do. And so the doctor that I was seeing then was like, well, maybe you should try Lupron again. And so I tried it again, and my pain actually got worse. So I didn't go back for the second dose, and I haven't tried it again since then.
So, yeah, so that second time, or that actually third time, did you do another 3 month course?
Yes. Yeah, it was a 3 month dose.
Yeah. And you say it made your symptoms worse. Was that like your period symptoms, or was it related to some of the long term effects we've heard about, you know, regarding, because Lupron, listeners, Lupron, and if you read the information and the inserts that come with the medication, or if you go online and do some research, you'll learn all of this about Lupron, is that it can reduce or cause bone density loss.
Right.
And pain for a lot of women who have been through the treatment. So what did you experience from that?
So during that time period, my pelvic pain got worse, and he didn't really understand why, and he wanted me to continue doing it, but I just couldn't with the amount of pain that I was in and missing work. But since then, so that would have been in 2013, I had a complete hysterectomy in 2014, and then I was diagnosed with osteoporosis in 2015 at 24 years old.
Do you think that, that's interesting, I hate to hear that. Do you have a family history of osteoporosis?
No, not that I know of. And I'm 100% sure that it's from Lupron. But, of course, no doctor is going to tell me, oh, yeah, it's from Lupron. You have osteoporosis from Lupron.
Right, exactly. So do you get bone density tests?
I do. So I've had two of those done since I was diagnosed, and those are yearly. And the last endocrinologist that I went to, he actually wanted me to try a medication for osteoporosis to try and build up my bones, but there's not enough studies done on people in my age group. So right now I'm trying to hold off on that, and just taking vitamin D supplements.
Right. Okay. Wow. So is that something that's progressive? Does it kind of just stay the same and you monitor it?
Right now, with my case, it's pretty much stayed the same since I was diagnosed, but it could progress more. So my doctor actually didn't want to test me for osteoporosis, but then I had a stress fracture in my knee from running, and at my age, I shouldn't have had that. So I asked her for a bone density scan, and she said, yeah, that's probably a good idea. The doctor that I was seeing at the time, she was awesome. So we went ahead and did the scan, and then she called me with the results.
Wow. So, when I was on Lupron, like I said, I was on a 3 month course treatment. So I just had one injection, but I remember experiencing the hot flashes, and I opted not to take the add-back therapy because when I started on it, I was getting headaches. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like the way I felt. Did you use the add back therapy?
The first time that I was given Lupron, I didn't. The second time I used Injuvia. And I don't remember like my symptoms getting better with the hot flashes, with the add back therapy.
Right. And mine tended to be worse at night and while I was sleeping. So it certainly didn't help my functioning throughout the day.
Right.
But we do what we have to do. You know, like you said, you were missing work, and sometimes our options are very limited. Doctors don't there are still hundreds and hundreds of doctors out there who don't understand the disease, what endometriosis is, how to treat it. So I know I look to a lot of alternative therapies. Mm-hmm. Are there any, is there anything that you would recommend as far as treatment or alternative medications or therapies to our audience that have helped you?
I actually haven't tried many alternative medications. So I had excision surgery in 2015. And since then, I haven't experienced endometriosis pain. And that was actually with Dr. Sinervo in Atlanta. So my symptoms are from other illnesses like osteoporosis or from the kidney stone that I've been experiencing.
Right, exactly. Because there can be additional health issues and complications that are kind of correlated and tie into or are caused from caused by endometriosis. So right. You had your hysterectomy in 2014.
Right. And I still had endometriosis symptoms after that. And the doctor that I was seeing that did my hysterectomy told me that there was nothing else he could do, that he removed my ovaries and my uterus and that I shouldn't be experiencing them. But as we know, a hysterectomy doesn't cure endometriosis. And so I did research and I found Dr. Sinervo.
So did your doctor who did the hysterectomy, I'm assuming he was like an OBGYN?
He was. Or a
surgeon? Yeah. Okay. Did he explore more to see if you had any adhesions or lesions?
He did while he was performing the surgery. So he wanted me to keep one of my ovaries at the time before he went in and explored. But once he got in, he saw that both of my ovaries needed to be removed. And so he did all of that and removed my uterus too. But he said that he removed all of the disease, but I was still having symptoms.
Yeah, and I often hear that women who make, and it's not an easy choice because you're young, you
right.
have children, you know, you're not able to plan for that naturally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's unfortunate to hear that even after having a partial or a full hysterectomy, that it doesn't eliminate the pain. So then you decided to, and I've actually heard a lot about Dr. Sinervo, and I followed your story. And I think that's how I connected with you, I think I learned about you from Dr. Sinervo because I had done some research because I didn't know that excision surgery was an option until I started digging a little bit deeper.
So
I thought the only surgical removal was through ablation. So when I heard about this, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And it makes so
right.
much sense since
it
ablation.
Does.
Yeah, ablation is only temporary, and you have to have it. You know, endometriosis grows back if it's not completely removed from the tissue.
Right. And so that's really, why I wish that endometriosis specialists were the only doctors that were allowed to perform surgery on us, honestly.
Yeah, I completely agree. So really, you know, if your surgery is done with the ablation technique, which, you know, in my case, that's what I've been through twice. And I have to expect to go through that every couple of years because my adhesions are going to grow back after my,
right.
you know, when I had my second surgery. My doctor did say, well, you know, basically the endometriosis has grown back in the same places that you had it before. And, you know, that's to be expected.
Yeah.
And you know, all of the symptoms start coming back. You know, after surgery, you may be okay for a few months or several months later, mm-hmm. but, you know, eventually, and it also, the surgery and those growths cause scar tissue within itself.
Right.
Cause pain also.
Yeah.
I want to hear a little bit more. So, like I said, I get excited when I hear excision surgery, and I've never really had a conversation with anyone who has gone through that journey. So, could you share a little bit more about that, your experience with Dr. Sinervo?
Yeah. So, their office, all of his staff, they are truly amazing. I actually remember him sitting and praying with me before my surgery. And no doctor has ever done that with me. And then he held my hand before they put me to sleep until I fell asleep before he started the surgery. And they know everything about endometriosis that there is to know. And I love their staff.
Yes. And he has I actually had a consultation with his co-doctor there in the office. Mm-hmm. I can't remember his name, but I think he's maybe he's of an Asian descent.
Okay.
I wish I could remember his name. I actually had a consultation. Of course, they are private and insurance doesn't cover it.
Right.
It is typical for, these clinics who do specialize in excision surgery. So what are your thoughts and feelings around that for women who don't have that to pay out of pocket?
Right. So for me, I was actually able to make payments on that. And I made payments on it after as well. So if you can get a credit card, I know those are very hard to come by with health issues and not being able to work and stuff. But if you can, I strongly recommend definitely going to see an endometriosis specialist.
Yeah, I do too. And, I'm hoping that, and, you know, of course, we're making a lot of leeway. The Endometriosis Foundation of America is, I know that they do conferences and seminars, and I often see Dr. Sinervo attending these events. Mm-hmm. So, it is nice to know that doctors do care and are wanting to learn more.
Yeah.
Since, it's become, it's the second most common OB issue, and we're just now in 2019,
right,
really, really learning about proper treatment for it.
Right, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But I do think a lot of that has to do with it being a women's disease, and people don't want to hear about it or talk about it. And I understand that too. At 18, 19 years old, it does seem kind of embarrassing to have to deal with these issues. But at the same time, if you don't talk about it, then what can you do?
Yeah, you're exactly right. That's why we're here. That's why we're doing this. That's why we've created that platform to bring women together. And you can see, if you listen to this, any of the episodes, people of all ages suffer from endometriosis.
Right.
Or some type of women's health or reproductive issues. So it really doesn't matter what age you are. We're just here for you to come together and help you learn about finding a doctor or what questions you need to ask your doctor or where you can learn and educate yourself more on endometriosis. With that being said, I want to hear more about your book. You are the author, which I think is incredible. You are the author of Living with Endometriosis, The Complete Guide to Risk Factors, Symptoms, and Treatment Options. So what can we learn from your book?
So you will learn about what I have been through, what treatments I have tried. Also information about the treatment. So I don't just want to put out my story. I want to put out medical information as well in case those treatments do help someone else, even though they didn't help me. I also, in the back of the book, list out questions that I used to take to doctor offices. If I ever see a new doctor, I take those with me. Medical treatments I've tried. I think that's really important so that you don't try treatments you've already tried if you don't want to go back to that, like with my case with Lupron.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. So not only is it a guide, you have medical information and it sounds like some tools. How did you go about gathering your medical research and medical information for the book?
So for my part of the story, I did get all of my medical records from doctors that I had seen from surgeries, and then medical research. So some of that came from, Dr. Sinervo's office, which he wrote the foreword, for the book. And then I would just Google research, and see what corresponded, what made sense to me.
Yeah, I think that's great that you also you know, have gotten that support from Dr. Sonervo and him, you know, participating and contributing to that writing as well. And yeah. their website is amazing. I actually,
it really
I
love is. Her.
Yes. And Dr. Second as well has a good website, but those are, I learned quite a bit about endometriosis and the different types of endometriosis. I didn't realize that, I mean, I knew that there were stages, but I didn't realize that depending on the area where your, or the progression of your endometriosis or where it's growing, they actually categorize that and give those medical names and medical terms.
Right, yeah.
So I think that's amazing. And those are really good resources to check out, you know, to get more information about endometriosis and how to go about treating it. And yeah. Nancy, yeah, are you familiar with Nancy's Nook on Facebook?
I am, yes.
Yeah.
And I think she has a lot of great resources too.
Yeah, I actually reached out and she contacted me directly because I was asking about doctors in my area that actually do perform excision surgery, mm-hmm. but also accept insurance. And I have found one.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah. And he reached out to me personally through via Facebook and said, you know, come see me, which I haven't yet. I haven't gotten to that point.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like I said, my symptoms right now are tolerable. I've made some lifestyle changes. I kind of backtracked. I used to be careful, you know, about my diet and working out, but I backslid, stopped caring for myself.
Yeah, and that happens.
Yeah, so I needed to refocus and recommit to my health because I knew how important it was to help manage my symptoms. So, you know, making some of those lifestyle changes has really helped me with my pain that I currently experience. So are you pain-free now that you've had your hysterectomy and the excision surgery? Are you completely pain-free from endometriosis? I know you have, of course, a whole slew of other issues that you battle with.
I would say yes, unless some of my symptoms are from endometriosis and I don't realize it and think it's from kidney issues.
Right, yeah, because I know you said that you had interstitial cystitis, and I just wanted to bring that up because I'm currently going through some bladder issues and going to be going through some upcoming procedures because that is actually named as endometriosis evil twin because it's common for women who have endometriosis to also have, also known as IC, as well.
So I actually went for testing for interstitial cystitis back in 2012, 2013, and I was told I didn't have it. During my excision surgery with Dr. Sonervo, he actually told me that I had a mild case of it. I haven't tried any treatments for it, but I am wondering if that's what's also causing my UTIs.
Right. Can you share some of your symptoms and what problems that causes you? I'm interested myself because, you know, like I said, I hope I'm not diagnosed with a new health condition. The procedure is mainly just to check to make sure that everything is working and functioning properly. Mm-hmm. But in the case, what would help me know, what advice could you give me if it happens to be interstitial cystitis?
I would definitely try and drink as much water as you can and stay away from certain foods that can trigger. And I think those can be different for everyone. And I've noticed with me that I've had some bladder pain, and I know that because I don't have my uterus. I know that's kind of hard for people that haven't had a hysterectomy to know whether their pain is from their uterus or their bladder.
Okay. Yeah, because I, you know, we talked earlier and I am experiencing some pain and frequency and burning. And I do notice that, like, if I'm drinking a lot of carbonated beverages or coffee, even decaf coffee, I drink more decaf coffee than regular coffee. I notice that those things tend to bother me. And I, you know, I've read that is, you know, just try to stay hydrated and mm-hmm. drink as much water as you can and stay away from, you know, beverages, dark beverages and, you know, sugary beverages that might aggravate symptoms.
Yeah. And I know that can be kind of hard to do.
It is, because I grew up, you know, being from North Carolina where Pepsi Cola was born.
Yes.
We were big Pepsi Cola drinkers, and so I've always loved soda. But, you know, it's worth the sacrifice, especially knowing that it's going to help. Something else we have in common is a vitamin D deficiency, which is also common in people who have endometriosis or
yes endometriosis. And I have seen that, and I have research in my book about that too. So I was diagnosed with vitamin D deficiency back in 2009, and so that could be a contributing factor to me having osteoporosis, but like I said, I'm 100% sure it's from Lupron.
So do you take a supplement? Because I was actually diagnosed about 2.5 months ago, so okay. My doctor prescribed me a very strong vitamin D supplement to take weekly. And okay. I'm actually due to go back for testing to see if that has helped me improve. Do you take you know, any supplementation to help your, you know, keep your levels where they need to be?
I do. I take 5,000 units of vitamin D every day.
5,000. Okay. Because mm-hmm. my current dose is 50,000 once a week. So I, you know,
okay.
when I go for my follow-up, I want to, you know, speak with him and ask what should I take on, you know, a daily basis to keep my levels in check.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Now, do your levels fluctuate? Are you tested, or do you just maintain it with your daily vitamin D supplement?
I'm usually tested yearly with my yearly blood work. And they usually, my levels usually tend to be 50, 55. They're still on the lower side, but they're within range. When I was diagnosed, I think at one point it was 19.
Yeah, and that's pretty low. See, mine wasn't quite that low. Mine was just under what they consider normal. I was at like 27, mm-hmm. but I don't know about you, but I had pain. I had like a muscle pain or like a weakness, and my doctor said it can actually cause that. And I'm like, okay, well, it makes total sense.
Yeah, I had that too, and I was tired all the time, which I still am, but I'm not as tired as I used to be when I was first diagnosed with vitamin D deficiency.
Yeah, I can remember because I was in the office working and I couldn't concentrate. I was getting I was not productive at all. I was getting no work done. Yeah. I had major brain fog, and then I started having, you know, muscle aches, and I told my supervisor, I said, something is not right. So I'm going to leave and go to the doctor. So
yeah.
That's, yeah. And I know that you can, you know, also this time of year, vitamin D deficiency is kind of common because we're in the fall and winter months where people are not outdoors as often soaking up sunlight. And
right.
the largest source of vitamin D is through sunlight exposure. So I'm hoping I can keep my levels in check and, you know, just be able to maintain that with, you know, just like a daily supplement.
Yeah, I hope you can too.
Because, oh my gosh, it makes you feel horrible.
It does. It really does.
So I want to talk about, you've got some other things that you are involved in. Mm-hmm. So you have your own business?
I do. So I named that Chronic Illness Support. And so I'm trying to build that up to where I can offer consultations for people who have endometriosis and that have questions about research or whatever questions they may have. And then I offer my books through that business as well.
That's awesome. And you have your experience, your background is actually as a public health educator. Is that correct?
Yes, that is what I have, a master's in public health and then a bachelor's of science in healthcare administration. I actually started out as a pharmacy technician. And so I tried pursuing pharmacy school a couple of times, but with my health, I wasn't able to finish.
So, yeah, we have a lot in common there because I used to be a pharmacy technician.
Oh, wow.
I did. Yeah. I worked in retail and I worked in a long-term care facility. And then I also had a few college years of community health education, but I finished up with educational degree, an elementary educational degree.
Okay. That's awesome.
Yeah. So you are also a patient ambassador.
Yes. With the Chronic Disease Coalition. So with that, I bring more awareness to endometriosis and try to get that on a global level. And then we do like monthly phone calls where we check in and see if they can help us in any way.
That's great to be involved and being able to give people outreach and being there as support. So let me see what else I want to ask you.
Okay.
So, yeah, let's go into the mental health direction as far as your endometriosis, because many of us kind of struggle with depression and anxiety. Do you experience any of that now, or did you experience any of that while you were learning about endometriosis and learning about your diagnosis and then having your hysterectomy? Because like I said, I'm sure that's probably not an easy decision, especially at such a young age.
Yes, definitely. So when I was first diagnosed, I was relieved to have a name for what I was going through. And then I started researching it later and finding out there was no cure. So that's depressing in and of itself. And then when I had my hysterectomy, I was 23 years old, and I moved out from my parents' house 3 months later. So that was really difficult to deal with. And I didn't really like for them to see what I was going through as far as depression and just being upset all the time, because I know they had to deal with it themselves because I wasn't able to have children for them to be grandparents. So I didn't want to add to that for them. I actually started going to a therapist, I want to say it was about 6 months after having my hysterectomy, and that's helped a lot.
Yeah, it's really important to, I know, like you said, it's funny, the first thing that we think about ourselves last.
Yes.
And think about others first and not being a burden or a bother to them, but it really is important to reach out and talk to your family members and your friends about what you're experiencing and what you're going through. You need to get that out there and open up. I know I've been there, I've done that. It's easier said than done, but when you do step out and, you know, it makes a world of a difference.
It does. And I have a great support system. I just kept everything bottled up because I didn't want to bring other people down.
I'm the same way. So, Samantha, do you have any other advice for people who suffer from endometriosis or who are struggling with the decision to go full hysterectomy or managing their symptoms with Lupron? What advice would you give for our listeners?
My advice would be to do research before you agree to anything, and to listen to your body and your gut. If you feel like, for instance, Lupron, if you feel like that's not a good choice for you, don't go through with it just because a doctor recommends it or if a family member thinks that that's what you need to try. If you don't feel comfortable with it, you don't need to go that route.
Yeah, so thank you for that. And then tell us how we can connect with you. How can we find your book? Do you have a website? Do you want to share any of that information with us?
Of course. So I'm on Facebook as Samantha Ballack. I'm on Instagram and Twitter. I have my own website, and it's SamanthaBowick.com. And then you can find my book on my website as well as Amazon or any bookstore.
And you do book signings too,
I do, right? Yes. I actually have a few coming up. I'm going to Greenville, South Carolina, March 16th at Five Forks Library. March 30th, I'm going to an Indo March in Hilton Head. So yeah, I'm looking forward to those.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's exciting. So I've got a couple of things on my plate too. I am holding a fundraiser. It's a boot camp benefit fundraiser for endometriosis. And since March is Endometriosis Awareness Month, we're having that on March 2nd. So anyone local in the community, you know, we're trying to outreach and get people to come in and sign up and come to the boot camp on March 2nd in the morning, and then just kind of campaigning and like on social media and Instagram and Facebook, letting people know, hey, you know, even though you're not local and you may not be coming to the boot camp, you can still contribute, you know, and any amount helps, even if it's $5, even $1 or $2.
Yeah, that sounds great. That's awesome you're doing that.
Yeah, you know, and then it involves, you know, awareness, and it has opened up so many conversations. I've been really, you know, excited. People are asking me about it. Young girls are asking me questions about it, you know, and I love those interactions. So, I know, we're making a difference, and it feels good.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for being here and supporting us. And is there anything else, any last things that you want to tell our listeners before we go?
Thank you for having me. And feel free to reach out with any questions that you have. I'm an open book with my story. So, yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
That wraps up this episode, so you can find the EndoWife and learn more at endowifelife.com. Thanks for listening. And if this episode rocked your endo world, then share it with friends using the Anchor app or leave a review on iTunes. Don't forget to check out the deal from our show sponsor.